This year's theme for the summer reading program at the Eugene Public Library is Be Creative. They could not have picked a more wildly creative and interesting speaker than our in-studio guest, cartoonist and author Linda Berry. Mm-hmm. Linda is the creator behind the syndicated strip Ernie Pook's Comique, which ran weekly for 30 years in some of the country's most notable alternative newspapers. Her books include 100 Demons, Cruddy, an illustrated novel, and Naked Ladies, Naked Ladies, Naked Ladies. Her most recent book, What It Is, combines dreamlike collages and drawings intertwined with evocative text. Tonight, fans will get the chance to hear an illustrated talk with Linda Berry at the library, and budding writers are invited to sign up for her Writing the Unthinkable workshop tomorrow. Linda Berry, welcome to the Northwest Passage.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
So I read... right off the bat, I know you get this question all the time, but it's really cool. Ernie Pook Comique was first published without you knowing about it. They say behind your back.
That's right.
What happened there?
Well, I had a really, really good friend. Actually, it happened twice. I had a really, really good friend. I had two good friends who were editors of school papers. Matt Groening, who was the editor of the paper at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. Go Gooey Ducks. And then John Keister, who was the editor of the Daily at the University of Washington. And I was drawing comic strips and just sending it to him, to those two guys. Well, actually with Matt, he was super square I thought he was like a straight guy, but I didn't know that what he was so advanced, it was a hippie college, if you know Evergreen, that he actually wore hard shoes and had shirts with buttons on them, which like nobody had back then. And I thought he was really square, so I would make comics to kind of blow his little mind. And it turned out he wasn't square at all. He just hated hippies, and he knew hippies hate shirts with buttons on them, I guess. I don't know. So I would just give these comics to him and send it to my friend John, and they both just started printing them, which was excellent.
Right on.
Yeah.
That would be the question, you know, that didn't bother you one bit. I mean, it really, was that the push to get you started? I mean, did you realize at that point that you had a future in this?
No, not at all. Not even kind of. Because I wanted to be a fine artist. I mean, I grew up in a funky neighborhood, you know, where nobody really went to college. And when I got to college, I got all freaked out because people seemed so educated and they were liked reading those books with really tiny type, you know, and that books, when I'd read them, I'd have those little tears of boredom running down my eyes, and okay, this time I really am going to pay attention to the sentence. And so I took an art class, a painting class. Actually, it was my teacher, Marilyn Frasca, who did set me out on my what turned out to be my career, the supernova of my career. I thought you couldn't make anything funny. You couldn't do comics because it wasn't art. You know what I mean? Art has to be something that feels a little bit like intensive care unit, you know, where it feels like somebody's going to die. Everything's really expensive. You know what I mean? When you go into galleries, don't you feel that way? Like, you know, just like, I don't know what to think. Where's the cafeteria? And so I didn't think so. I wouldn't even call what I was doing comics. I started calling them, they're drawings with words, man. And, you know, it's interesting because still in comics, there's a real feeling about you shouldn't call them comics. Now everybody's using the term graphic novels for even stuff that isn't novels and certainly not that graphic. Chris Ware, who's a great cartoonist, says that his idea of a graphic novel is Lady Chatterley's Lover. It's not, you know. And so it's funny, but people have this real resistance to using the word comics or comic strips. But I really like to use it, and almost every cartoonist I know likes to use it. And when people say, you know, they'll introduce me, they'll go, Linda's a cartoonist, and they go, is it okay if I call you that? Is that insulting? It's like, no, I really like it quite a bit.
So retro there.
Yeah.
So you have a made-up word yourself, though. I mean, what is it? Why don't you tell everybody?
The autobifictionalography?
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't dare go there. But what is that?
Autobifictionalography is this. If you go into a store, say you're going into a record store, and there's a really cool guy behind the desk, right? Like a groovy, groovy, cool guy. And so you pick up your Jonas Brothers CD because you just, you gotta get one, man. You just can't help it. And you put it there, and he gives you that look. You know that look where he's like, you know, and then you feel like you're melting? It's really for my cousin who's like... disabled and less loves the Jonas Brothers, but it's really for you. So then you go back to your car and you start thinking about all the things you could have said. Do you know what I mean? And what you do is in your mind, you start going through all the things you could have said. And I always think of that as like the original editing. And when you go, you know what I should have said? You don't do that. You walk back in your mind, you walk back into the store, you put the Jonas Brothers CD down, he looks at you, and then you say something, and he goes, oh, like you get him. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then what do? Don't you play it over in your head again, over and over again, because it makes you feel better. So that by the time you get home and you call up your friend and tell him that's what you did say to that guy, you're not really lying. I mean, it's you didn't really say it in real life, but you said it so many more times in your head, and that's what I call autobifictionalography.
Right on. It happened somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is brilliant.
Well,
I'm going to use it now. I mean, I have all along. I just didn't know it had a word.
Do you know what? There's actually a name for it. The French call it esprit d'escalier, the spirit of the stairs. You know, like as you're leaving on the stairs, I always say it's the spirit that you have when you realize what you could have said to throw the anvil of hatred from the top of the stairs.
Okay. Your comics are really complex. I mean, anyone can read them, I feel like, and get something out of them. So what is your target audience for them?
You know, I don't actually have a target audience. I have a way of working, and I have these characters, right? So, for instance, and the way that I work is I never, ever plan out the story beforehand. Ever, ever, ever. What I do know is I know, like, for instance, my comic strip's going to be 4 panels. So I know I have 4 panels. And I know I have these characters. Marlis is a certain way. She's a gifted child and lets you know that immediately. And Arna is another way. She loves fungus more than she wants to write a book called Who Put the Fun in Fungus. And so it depends on which character is narrating. And what I often do is I often have a bag that has a bunch of index cards in it that just have a noun or a word. So I have to swear that no matter what word I pull out, like scary movie, and if it's Marlis narrating, and if all I have to do is have that, and I can start to hear the first couple sentences, and that's all I need. All I do is I try to really train myself to not figure out what the comic strip's going to be like. But I write those first couple sentences, and oftentimes by the time I write those, and I don't pencil anything in either, which people always talk about my faux naive style. It's like there's nothing faux about it. But so I just draw, and when the narration stops coming, I'll just often work on Marlis or work on the drawing part. And once I draw her, then I can kind of figure out what she's saying. But we all can do that. I mean, one of the most incredible things I ever saw was, it was at one of those Renaissance fairs, which I don't know if you've ever been to one, but everyone should go just to know there's an alternative universe out there where people are eating giant turkey legs. And anyway, there were these two guys, and they did garbage Shakespeare. They were two men who had memorized Shakespeare. And they'd go, you know, it's the Globe Theater. And they just drew a circle in the dirt. And one guy picked up a cigarette butt. And then there was a bottle cap. And they did Romeo and Juliet, where Romeo was the cigarette butt and Juliet was the bottle cap, which I thought was sort of sexist. But but we watched those cigarette butts and the bottle cap like it was really Romeo and Juliet talking, you know. And it turns out that if you have a comic strip and you just draw the person, you'll kind of know what they're saying. So it's not that hard. I think that the mistake a lot of people make is they try to figure something out before they actually make it. That's where I can't do that. Yeah, it's also why I could never hold a job.
Linda, tomorrow you're going to hold a writing workshop, and that's the least of it, I'm sure. But how do you get folks into a space that where they can start to, you know, really seek out or, you know, check out their creativity and check in with it maybe?
Well, I think that actually all of us have that capacity. You know how almost everybody that you meet, like I have a friend who's a singer, and every time people find out she's a singer, they go, oh, I wish I could sing. You know, or when they find out I'm a writer, they go, oh, I wish I could write. And you find out that people do wish they could write. And I think what starts to happen is people think writing comes from a different place than their normal experiences every day. But my feeling is anybody who has this capacity to walk into a room and suddenly there's this smell and it smells exactly like your Aunt Carol's basement. Do you know what I'm talking about? You don't expect it, but there's Aunt Carol's basement flooding just for a second. And it doesn't come as like, it's not a thought. It's actual flooding. What I try to do is work with people to get that thing to come and then let's freeze frame that. So here's Aunt Carol's basement. And what I often do, one of my first exercises I often ask people to do is think of a car from early on in their lives. And so they'll think of a car and I'll say, picture it. And they'll picture it. And then I'll say, as you're picturing it, are you inside of the car or outside of the car? And they know. And then I go, okay, is it day or night? They know. And it's like, if you're inside the car, what seat are you sitting in? And it turns out that those images that come from early, will come from our lives, that anybody who can smell a smell and have that come back, or anybody who hears a line of a song on the radio, anybody who, and then there's eighth grade, God, eighth grade is back, and there's Bob Buck wearing a speed stick, you know? That was my problem, is I love the smell of speed stick so much that I actually wore it as my own deodorant because I thought it was the hottest smell, and it didn't occur to me that guys wouldn't find speed stick as a beautiful smell. That it would be a confusing spell for them. But see, that was that's an example right there of that kind of thing. Anybody who has that capacity, which is every human being, has the capacity to write a compelling story. So that's the trick. The trick is to make it unexpected and to write for a very short amount of time. When we're working together, we usually don't write for any longer than 8 minutes. Because what starts to happen is you can practice this thing in 8 minutes, and then after you get used to what an image feels like, and that you're always we're floating in them every day, then you can kind of expand that amount of time.
Well, it is going to be some good times over at the public library
tonight. Yeah,
yes, we want to encourage folks to
please come so I won't be lonely.
Definitely. Yes, and another point, that the space is limited for the workshop. So if you want to see Linda Berry, you probably ought to
6 o'clock at the downtown incredible downtown Eugene Public Library. I have total library envy.
It is nice.
It is. Yes. It's incredible.
We're proud of it.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for dropping by and sharing some of your hip humor with us today. Thank you.
I love Eugene.
Shout out.
Linda Berry will appear at the Downtown Eugene Public Library tonight at 6 o'clock. She'll give an illustrated talk on creativity. Tomorrow, she will hold a Writing the Unthinkable workshop. Both are free to the public.